And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
About 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on June 4th. It's a Saturday night. It's time for the WGN Radio Theater, program 83 in the series. To my right, the very dimpled and vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa? How
hey,
are
Carl,
you?
Hey, Carl. How are you?
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Even though this is radio,
I know.
Even better to hear you.
And better to hear you with my dear.
Yes.
Yeah, something like that.
And Mike Costella, our executive producer, is in the house. Hi, Mike. How are
How's
you?
How's it going?
Shane Reardon, our producer, is here. What's up, buddy? How are
Hi, guys.
You?
Good.
And my good pal, Christian James, is here, and he is in the studio as well, and I don't know if we'll be able to hear him, but maybe we can. Hi, Christian. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Carl.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
You looking good?
Well.
I haven't seen him in like a year or two, maybe 2 years. Could it be two years?
Yeah, it's been about 2 years.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you,
and it's good to see you, too, Christian,
yes.
Just saying.
You look about 2 years
Lisa.
Older, but other than that, you look great.
2 years
Thank
older.
You.
He's
yeah.
cleaned up a little bit.
Yeah, he is. And we have classic radio shows for you, as we always do here on the WGN Radio Theater, because we're here Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. We play your favorites like The Shadow and Jack Benny and Burns and Allen, all your favorite radio shows. Now, tonight, we have a salute to Sidney Greenstreet, Casper Gutman. You know who he is, Lisa? Sidney Greenstreet?
I sure do, Carl.
He was a big boy,
yes,
that Sidney.
Yes, he was.
And we'll hear him in The Adventures of Nero Wolfe and then Academy Award Theater with The Maltese Falcon. And you'll hear the original cast in this, including Humphrey Bogart, Sidney Greenstreet, and I think Mary Astor is in that as well. And then the Gulf Screen Guild Theater, along with those same three people, Sidney Greenstreet, Humphrey Bogart, Mary Astor, in Across the Pacific from 1943. Great lineup, and it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars in the TV series Big Little Lies about three mothers with kindergarten-age kids who become friends, a friendship that ends in murder.
All right, what
and
do they win?
The winner will win a $25 gift certificate for Chicago's best deep-dish pizza, Lou Malnati's.
All right, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Give us a call and win a Lou Malnati's pizza. And here's a hint. This actress played Suzanne Stone in 1995's To Die For.
Suzanne Moretto is my married name. My own name is Suzanne Stone.
All right.
That's my professional name.
That's her professional name, Lisa.
Yeah, I heard her say that.
If you know who that is, give us a call. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break. Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com.
Welcome back. This is show 83 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Suzanne Moretto is my married name. My own name is Suzanne Stone. That's my professional name.
And we've got Ron on the line from Chicago. Hey, Ron. Hey, Ron.
Wait a second.
Whoops.
There we go.
There's Ron. How are you?
Okay, pretty good. This is Nicole Kidman.
Yes. I'm wondering if Ron is your professional name.
Yes.
Yes. Excellent. You are a winner. You have won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, my personal favorite. And I hope you can check them out online at loumalnatis.com. Hey, Ron, thanks so much for listening to the show and for calling in.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, Ron. Hey, before we tune in to The Adventures of Nero Wolfe, I have to have a shout out because I went to Iron Horse Barbecue. They were here. Remember Scott Hansen
when
he was here?
Of course.
Just incredible food. in South Barrington, really in the downtown Barrington area. I took my son and my son's friend. We had a great dinner tonight, and Scott is going to give me some gift certificates to give away to our listeners. That's how great it is. So, Scott, I want to say thanks for the great dinner, and we're going to get some gift certificates to give to our listeners.
Sounds
and if
good.
You're in the Barrington area, stop by Iron Horse Barbecue. Fantastic food. Okay, time now for our tribute to the great Sidney Greenstreet. He started really late in life, sort of like I'm not sure if it was the Maltese Falcon. It might have been the Maltese Falcon was his first movie, and he was like in his 60s already when he decided, I'm going to get into the acting gig. And it worked for him. And in fact, I believe he was nominated or even won an Academy Award for some of his performances. And we're going to listen to a radio adaptation of the Maltese Falcon in hour two, so we'll get to hear that with Humphrey Bogart. But right now, he had his own radio series. It was The Adventures of Nero Wolfe. Any relation, Lisa?
That's my great-uncle.
Oh, great-uncle, okay. Detective series, and he played Rex Stout's gargantuan gourmet detective, first aired in 1943. But not with Sidney Greenstreet. It was a different actor, Santos Ortega, and then later Louis Van Ruten. But really the best Adventures of Nero Wolfe radio series starred the great Sidney Greenstreet. And Wolfe, it was an interesting thing with Nero Wolfe. He was a big guy, right? He was this big, giant guy. He never wanted to leave his brownstone in New York. He sent his assistant out to solve the crimes, but he sort of did all the deduction while he was in his brownstone, and he would talk to Archie Goodwin, his assistant, and Archie would do all the legwork and solve the crime. And that's what you're going to hear right now, a great radio adventure called The Careless Cleaner. This is from November 17th, 1950, Sidney Greenstreet now, in The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we take you to the most famous brownstone house in New York City, the one located at number 601 West 35th Street.
Oh, Mr. Wolfe. Mr. Wolfe.
What's that, Archie?
Would you be interested in taking on a case involving a woman who was found stabbed to death in one of New York's fancier men's clubs?
Can't you see I'm already occupied, Archie? My Oncidium hybrid is ailing.
But, sir, cash. C-A-S-H. Remember, you need it to live on?
Well, you're actually learning to spell.
You'd better learn to count. We're broke.
Thank you, Mr. Goodwin. Now, if you'll just go away and stop interfering... Oh, just a minute.
Yes, sir.
On your way out, switch on the fan.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's that one and only man of moves. The most famous detective in modern fiction. That corpulent, orchid-raising, beer-drinking gourmet who also happens to be a genius. Rex Stout's incomparable Nero Wolfe, starring Mr. Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight, Nero Wolfe's long-suffering assistant, Archie Goodwin, tells us of the case of the careless cleaner.
Very well at the time, though Mr. Wolfe had hung one of the Michelson's paintings on the library wall. But then I guess we should have considered ourselves lucky not to have known him or his wife, Phila. 2 weeks ago, they had a quarrel.
Oh, Clay, darling, I didn't expect you home so soon. I thought you were going to the museum to see the Van Goghs.
I decided not to, Phila.
Oh, well, if you were... plan to paint this afternoon, I'll get out of the studio. I want to run some errands anyway.
Why don't you make your phone call from here, Phila?
Phone call?
Who is he, Phila?
He?
Who are you waiting for this afternoon?
Please, Clay, don't start that jealousy routine again.
Don't try to kid me.
You're being stupid, Clay.
I'm stupid, all right, but I'm getting wise pretty fast. I'm through, Phila. I've had enough. I'm leaving you. So stay out of my way and keep your boyfriend out of my way, too, whoever he is, or I'll kill him.
He's a jolly good fellow.
Yes?
What can I do for you?
Sleepy. I want to have a drink and go to bed.
I'm sorry, sir. The Garrison Club's a private establishment. No rooms available to the public.
You think I'm drunk?
Oh, no, sir.
Why do you suppose I came here?
And I'm sure I wouldn't know, sir.
I'll tell you why. I came here to see my old pal, Lou Saunders. That's why.
You know Mr. Saunders?
Do I know? Look, I paint him, Lou sells him.
Mr. Saunders is your agent?
I'm Clay Michelson. Just call Mr. Saunders.
Clay? What in the world?
Lou, tell this guy who I am.
But I'm sorry, Mr. Saunders.
It's all right, Mr. Martin.
You see? Let's go have a drink.
Yeah, sure, Clay. Yeah.
You know what, Lou? I left Fela. Yep, I walked out on her.
Is there something I can do, Mr. Saunders?
Yeah, have someone fix a bed in the other room of my suite. Mr. Michelson will be staying with me. At least for tonight.
Mr. Wolf?
Yes, Jim.
It's Friday.
Good. Fish for dinner, then.
Nope. I was not referring to dinner.
You were not? I can think of nothing more interesting at the moment.
Oh, I can. My salary.
Of course, according to the Julian calendar.
We're on the Gregorian, so let's stick to it. Today is Friday. Today, I get paid.
Archie, there's a drop.
Oh, don't exaggerate. You can't be getting the cold shudders just because I'm asking for my money.
I can distinctly feel fresh air flowing into the room.
Well, if possible, I might have opened a window 6 inches.
You're insane. Shut it at once.
Nope.
Are you trying to blackmail me?
You think it might work?
Never.
Then the window stays open.
You're fired.
I accept your offer. All you have to do is pay up.
I've hired you again.
Oh, Mr. Wolf, you've cleaned out the bank balance again?
Well, that is... But had you seen those Miltonians...
Would I have voluntarily given up my paycheck for them? Orchids are very beautiful, Mr. Wolf, but blondes are...
The door, Archie.
I am unemployed.
Confound you, it may be a client, and if it is, and we can extract the fee. You follow me, Archie?
I'm already on my way to the door.
Mr. Wolf, I've got to see him at once.
Well, come in.
Thank you.
Mr. Wolf, this is...
My name is Saunders, Mr. Wolf. We've met before.
Yes, I remember. As a matter of fact, you sold me a painting of Michelson.
Yes, well, that's why I'm here. It's about Michelson, Mr. Wolf, that I've come. Frankly, I think the man's about to go mad. He and his wife have split up and
such a splendid artist, too. A pity.
I don't know what to do. He's drinking like a fish. For 2 weeks, I've been letting him live in part of my suite at the Garrison Club, but... He's just steadily getting worse.
I try a hospital.
I can't. The publicity. Mr. Wolf, Clay admired you so that time we all had dinner after the painting transaction. I thought maybe you could talk to him. Maybe you could get him on his feet again.
I'm not a doctor, Mr. Saunders.
But I'm sure he'd listen to you.
Excuse me a moment, Mr. Saunders. Nero Wolf speaking.
Inspector Kramer.
Good evening, Inspector.
Got a guy called Lou Saunders at your place? Garrison Club said he'd gone to your place.
Yes, he's here.
We'll see to it that he doesn't leave until I get there.
I'll hardly do that, Inspector. I have no reason to detain Mr. Saunders.
There's plenty of reason. It so happens a woman's just been murdered in his suite.
Murdered?
Yeah. A Miss Hilda Lundgren.
What's happened?
Now you hold him.
Do you know a Miss Hilda Lundgren, Saunders?
Hilda Lundgren? I've never heard of her.
She seems to have chosen your suite to be murdered in.
I better get right over there.
Mr. Saunders says to tell you he'll be right over, Inspector.
Now listen, Wolf.
Good day, Inspector.
Murdered. Murdered in my suite. Mr. Wolf, you've got to come with me.
Mr. Goodwin will accompany you after the formality of a retainer, Mr. Saunders.
Oh, anything you say. Here, I'll write a check.
Good. 500.
500? Fine.
My friend and assistant, Mr. Goodwin, will go with you. I have great confidence in his ability to bring back every detail of a murder, particularly where a woman's involved.
Okay, you photographers, picnic's over for tonight. Pick up your stuff and get out of here.
You sound real mean today, Inspector Kramer.
Well, if it isn't Nero Wolf's favorite stooge. What are you doing here, Goodwin?
I got bored with my knitting.
Look, I wasn't asking for humor.
I'm Louis Saunders, Inspector.
Saunders? Ever seen that woman before?
Yes. Yes, I believe I have. I can't remember where, but the face looks familiar.
Lovely-looking woman. Blonde and really built.
Well, she ought to look familiar. She's one of the cleaning women here at the club.
She is? Cleaning? Well, since when have gals like this been reduced to cleaning floors? What's happening to the world? There ought to be a law.
Yeah, there is. She was killed with a knife, or haven't you had time to notice?
That's not a knife, Inspector Kramer. That's one of Clay's Chinese letter openers.
What was that?
Well, nothing. Nothing at all. Yes, it is a strange knife.
What were you saying, Mr. Saunders?
I just said that looked like one of the letter openers belonging to one of my friends.
Who is this Clay?
Clay Michelson, the artist. You can't possibly think he'd do a thing like this.
I think everybody did it until we know otherwise. When were you last up here, Mr. Saunders?
Me? Why, just a little while ago. I changed my clothes just before I went to see Mr. Wolfe.
She wasn't here then?
Well, I don't know. I didn't come into this room, just in my part of the suite.
Your part? Who occupies this room?
Mr. Michelson. He's been staying with me.
Strange wound, no blood.
What do you think you are, Goodwin, a medical examiner?
Oh, but I...
Yeah. The killer probably wiped the blood away. Saunders, have you any idea where your artist friend might have run off to?
I haven't seen Clay all afternoon. He spends a lot of time down in the bar.
Well, he'd hardly sit in a bar if he's killed somebody.
But why would he pick on the cleaning woman?
Oh, this is no ordinary cleaning woman. Get a load of that figure.
Watch it, Goodwin. You're liable to stretch your brain.
But you're wrong. In spite of everything, Clay's still terribly in love with his wife. He wouldn't...
Hello? When did you get in?
Yeah, who's this?
Clay.
We're your friends, Lou. They won't serve me any more liquor down at the bar. I gotta find my flask.
Mr. Michelson, may I introduce you to Inspector Kramer of the police?
Who's this guy, Lou?
He's Nero Wolf's assistant.
Wolf? Police? Well, what do you all want? Somebody park overtime? Where's my flask? The one with my initials. I just bought it this morning.
Mr. Michelson, do you know that somebody was murdered here in your room?
Murdered? Why don't you guys go away and joke with somebody else? Where's my flask?
You better get hold of yourself. I said there's been a murder. Understand?
You serious?
Yep. And I wouldn't be surprised if Inspector Kramer here considers you top suspect.
Me? They think I did it?
You better pull yourself together, Clay.
Yeah, because I got a lot of questions.
Excuse me, the phone.
Now sit down, Mr. Saunders. I'll answer it.
Hello?
Hello?
This is Fila. Who is this?
This is Inspector Kramer. Hello? Hello? Who is Fila? Anyone know?
Well, that's my wife.
Your wife?
I want to speak to her.
Come back here, Michelson.
Let me alone. You're not going anywhere. Now, stay back there.
You're wrong, Inspector. I am going somewhere.
Junior's got a gun.
Yes, Inspector. You should be more careful about your gun when you shove people.
Now, look, Mr. Michelson.
Mr. Wolf myself. Stay back, Inspector.
You haven't got a chance. We'll nab you before you get a block away.
Well, then I'll just jerk these phone wires. And I'll lock the doors. That should hold you long enough. Good night.
All right, that's the first portion of the New Adventures of Nero Wolfe radio drama from 1950. Careless Cleaner is the title, starring Sidney Greenstreet as Nero Wolfe. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, David Jennings. I'm Carl Amari, Lisa Wolfe to my right, and we are playing classic radio shows for you till 2 o'clock in the morning. We'll do this tomorrow night, too. We're here Saturdays and Sundays with all your favorite radio dramas. We have a salute to Sidney Greenstreet tonight, and we're tuning in to his radio series, The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe. This is called The Case of the Careless Cleaner, and it's from November 17, 1950. Here's the conclusion now of The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe.
Nero Wolfe speaking.
Wolf Kramer.
Indeed.
Clay Michelson may be on his way over there. Hold him until I get there.
Hold him why?
More than 10 minutes ago, he held me up at the point of a gun.
He carries a gun?
It was my gun.
Careless of you, Inspector. Goodbye. Come in.
Mr. Wolfe?
Yes?
My name is Clay Michelson.
Yes, I was rather expecting you.
You've got to help me.
They think I murdered someone.
You shouldn't have run away from the police.
I've been drinking a lot, but I wouldn't murder anyone. Phila'd tell you that.
Your wife. You see the model in that painting of yours I purchased?
What difference does that make? I tell you, they're after me for murder.
You obviously loved your wife deeply at the time you painted her.
Oh, here you are, Mr. Wolf. Michelson.
Clay. Good Lord, man. The police are on their way over here.
He came for my help, Mr. Saunders.
Oh, I'm glad he did, Mr. Wolf. But we left Inspector Kramer talking from a phone booth. He'll be here any minute.
And we've only a minute to decide why anyone would want to kill a cleaning woman.
I didn't kill anybody.
She was a beautiful woman, Mr. Wolf.
I gathered that, Archie, from your unusual interest in the case.
She was stabbed with a letter opener from Mr. Michelson's house.
Which might add Mrs. Michelson to our suspect list.
Phila? You can't suspect Phila.
You're very gallant to Michelson. Just how was this beautiful young cleaning woman, this Miss Lundgren, stabbed?
In the heart. Her eyes were wide open, pupils dilated with shock.
And details later, Archie. Kramer will be here shortly. The moment I would like to know where everyone was.
Well, Mr. Saunders was here with us, you remember. I don't know where Mrs. Michelson was, but I could go see her and find out.
No, it won't be necessary, Archie. Mr. Michelson, where were you?
Me? Why, I'm not sure. I can't seem to remember.
It's hardly what we would call helpful.
I was drunk. Maybe I went to Phila's. I've been over there lots this week trying to talk to her. Yet I must have gone over there.
Have you ever seen the murdered woman before?
No, I never saw her before in my life.
I've seen her before, Mr. Wolf.
Indeed, Mr. Saunders. I seem to remember your earlier statement to the contrary.
Well, I didn't know her name, but when I saw her, I remembered her. I understand she was quite an alcoholic.
Unfortunate woman. Beautiful woman.
Well, look who's here, Inspector Kramer.
Oh, here you are, Michelson.
And as usual, you didn't have the courtesy to ring the bell, Inspector.
And give you a chance to get this guy out of here? Nothing doing, Wolf. Now, come on. We're going to headquarters.
Mr. Wolf, you can't let him take me. I didn't do it.
I'm afraid there's not much I can do about it, Mr. Michelson.
Come on. You come along too, Saunders. I got to get a statement from you.
Of course.
This way. Come on.
Very well. All right. I just got an angle.
Really, Archie?
Sure, it's simple. Saunders been going for this beautiful cleaning babe. Clay worms in. Saunders kills her.
Perhaps there was jealousy somewhere in this case, Archie. Yeah, Wolf speaking.
Mr. Wolf, this is Phila Michelson. You don't know me, but you once bought a painting from my husband. How good to see you, Mr. Wolf. You've got to help me.
Mrs. Michelson, have some of this delicious beer. Another can, Archie. And now, Mrs. Michelson, may I ask how you found out there was a murder in the first place?
A policeman came to see me. He told me what had happened, that they were looking for Clay. I don't know what to think. He's temperamental, he's jealous, and he's sometimes violent, but can't imagine anything like this, not Clay. Maybe some of those friends of his, but...
You don't care for your husband's friends.
No, they all live off him. They're leeches.
Mrs. Michelson, did your husband come to see you this afternoon?
This afternoon? No.
Quite positive?
Oh, yes.
Because that was his alibi for the time of the murder. He said he went to see you. Of course, he was fuzzy, usual effect of alcohol on the brain cells, but... Mrs. Michelson, might I be a little indiscreet for a moment?
Indiscreet?
Have you been seeing some other man?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Please, Mrs. Michelson, I'm afraid your face gives away more than you tell.
I thought we were here to talk about a murder, Mr. Wolf.
Indeed, but your husband's jealousy might well fit into that category.
Clay, imagine things.
You're a very beautiful woman, Mrs. Michelson. Now, if you'll try telling me the truth, perhaps we can accomplish something.
But I tell you... All right. So I thought I was in love with another man.
Your husband suspected but didn't know, huh?
No. Clay didn't know. He wouldn't have given me a divorce anyway.
You sound as though you want your husband back.
I did, but I didn't even know where he went.
Indeed, Mrs. Michelson. Archie informs me that the murdered woman was quite lovely.
What are you trying to suggest?
You said yourself you wanted your husband back.
Yeah, one woman jealous of another, that's always murder.
Why, that's stupid. Clay wouldn't play around with a maid. That's stupid. Clay loves me. I'm not jealous of anyone. No one, do you understand?
Archie, if you see Mrs. Michelson home...
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I can find my own way.
I prefer Archie took you, Mrs. Michelson. You wanted my help, didn't you?
Thank you,
Mrs. Michelson. If you will just wait outside for a moment, please.
What have you got in mind, Mr. Wolf?
Try exercising your own judgment just once, Archie.
You mean she's the one who's jealous?
Perhaps, Archie. Perhaps she may want us to think she was jealous. Perhaps she actually doesn't want her husband back at all, only to pin a murder on him. Mm. You see, in this case, it would be simpler than divorce.
Yeah? Yeah, she might just be trying to get rid of him.
She might, Archie. But then she's a woman, so don't count on anything. She might even be telling the truth.
This is where I live, Mr. Goodwin.
Nice. Very nice. I like Greenwich Village.
I'm trying to figure out why Mr. Wolf sent you along with me.
I'm a sucker for beautiful women.
I wonder. Archie.
Yeah?
Does Mr. Wolf believe me?
He hasn't made an official statement yet. Nice furniture and things.
You sound like an appraiser or someone looking for something.
It's because it's November.
Mr. Wolf sent you to search my apartment.
You could be wrong. I don't... Oh.
What's the matter now?
Thought you said your husband hadn't been here today.
He wasn't.
And what's his flask doing among these papers on the desk? Very prettily decorated with his initials. He was looking for it at the clubs.
Flask? I don't know what it's doing there.
Yeah, sure. You're trying to help, Clay. Right into the electric chair. His only alibi was his being here this afternoon, and you said he wasn't. Then what is his flask doing here? He said he just bought it this morning, so he must have been here today.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Where's your phone?
Well, you've got things wrong. I don't know anything about that flask.
Hey, the lights... Who switched off those lights? Fila, put those lights on. Put on those lights. Oh, the lights are... Get to the lights. That flask... Gone.
Nero Wolf speaking.
Wolf, where's Fila Michelson?
Fila, perhaps you might try the lost and found, Inspector.
Now, look, I know she was over at your place.
I thought you were interested in Clay Michelson.
Well, I let him and Saunders go, for the present. They're clean until I get the medical examiner's report.
Oh, when will it be ready, by the way?
An autopsy takes time, you know that. Where's the Michelson woman?
I believe she had a date with Archie. Why do you want her?
I'm sure it never dawned on you, Wolf, but this cleaning woman who was killed was some dish. Maybe Mrs. Michelson was the jealous one.
Your thinking is beginning to bear an amazing resemblance to Archie's, Inspector.
Also, it maybe never dawned on you that Fela Michelson hasn't offered an alibi for the time of the murder.
You're right, Inspector. Yeah, you are.
Come on, Wolf, quit stalling. Where's Fela Michelson?
What? Oh, I really don't know, Inspector, but perhaps as a last resort, of course, you might try her home. Good night, Inspector. Inevitable. The moment I'm comfortable. Come in.
Mr. Wolf. Oh, thank heavens you're here.
I always am. Where's Mr. Goodman?
I don't understand how it happened. I swear I don't.
What happened?
I haven't got any idea how it got there.
Got where? Calm down, Mrs. Michelson.
Now,
just what got where?
Clay's new flask. Your assistant, Archie. He came home with me, and that new initial flask was there. He thinks Clay was there this afternoon, and that I'm trying to frame him or something.
Oh, here you are.
She's here, therefore.
This is our gal, Mr. Wolf. She's been lying right down the line.
I tell you, Clay wasn't there.
Then why did you give me this clout on the head and grab the evidence and run?
I didn't. I didn't hit you. I ran, but I didn't hit you. And I didn't take that flask either.
Oh, next thing she'll say, there wasn't any flask.
Stop gaping at Mrs. Michelson, Archie, and open the door.
Yeah, sure.
Well, Mr. Wolf, they let Clay and me go for the... Fela, what are you doing here?
After your visit this afternoon, Mr. Saunders, she decided to come down and see me.
After my visit? What makes you think I was at Fela's?
It was Mr. Saunders, not your husband, who came to visit you this afternoon, wasn't it, Mrs. Michelson?
I don't have anything to do with Mr. Saunders.
Then might I ask why you called him today?
I wasn't calling him. I was calling Clay.
You told me earlier yourself that you didn't know where Mr. Mackeson was.
Well, all right. So what if it was Mr. Saunders who came this afternoon?
As he has for many afternoons.
What are you trying to get at, Mr. Wolf?
Saunders? He and Feeler?
Yes, Archie, Mr. Saunders, the artist's friend and agent, happens to be the one who was making a fool of the artist.
But that's all over. I told him. That's what I was talking to Mr. Saunders about this afternoon. I didn't want Clay to know. Clay would never have come back.
All right, so it was Feeler and me. I admit it, but that's not murder.
I suggest that it is, Mr. Saunders. I suggest that one of you two murdered the cleaning woman. Whichever one of you carelessly left a whiskey flask in Feeler's apartment.
This is murder, Mr. Wolf. Not a joke.
Not at all a joke. You see, our cleaning woman was not murdered by the knife found in her body. She was poisoned.
Poisoned? Not by the knife?
Poisoned. She undoubtedly drank from Michelson's flask while she was working in his room at the Garrison Club.
But she was stabbed.
True. However, Miss Lundgren was an alcoholic. Saunders mentioned that, and I checked with the club manager.
But how does that prove there was poison in the flask? That she was poisoned?
Archie, would you mind repeating your description of the dead Miss Lundgren? First, as to the wound.
Okay. There was no blood.
Someone advanced a fantastic theory about wiping the blood away. And now, Archie, the description of the body of Miss Lundgren.
I mentioned the fact that her eyes were wide open, the pupils were dilated, and... Hey... Dilated pupils?
Yes, Archie. The lack of blood had already made me wonder about the entire affair. When you added the dilated pupils...
What's special about dilated pupils?
In death, that is a common symptom of poison by a certain vegetable drug of considerable potency.
But what was the point of stabbing her?
The poison did the job. However, the killer later used the letter knife in an effort to deceive the police. However, he unhappily forgot that the dead don't bleed.
I think you're guessing, Mr. Wolf.
Am I?
All I can say is that I was at the pool in the early afternoon.
You're very certain you were at the club pool when the murder was committed, Mr. Saunders?
Certainly. From 1 until 3.
Excuse me, please. Wolf speaking.
Inspector Kramer, medical examiner's report just came in this minute. And get a load of this, wizard. The dame didn't die of stabbing at all.
I know.
You know?
She died of drinking a fatal dose of poison known as deadly nightshade.
What? How do you know that?
Inspector, do they know what time she died?
Time? The medical examiner says 2:30.
Thank you, Inspector. Oh, incidentally, if you care to drop over here, you may pick up the murderer. Goodbye.
I heard him, Wolf. She died at 2:30. As I told you, I was in the pool at 2:30.
Which is exactly how you prove yourself a murderer, Mr. Saunders.
I proved myself...
Even the police didn't know what time she died. Until just now. And the body wasn't found until the evening. How did you know she died between 1 and 3?
I didn't know, but...
You probably were at the pool at the time. The maid drank the poisoned whiskey you put in the flask of your friend Clay Michelson.
I tell you, you're crazy.
You planned to get rid of Clay, who stood in the way of your marrying Feeler. When you came back to your room at 3 and found that the maid had drunk it instead, you stabbed her with Clay's letter opener to cover up the real cause of the murder and throw suspicion on Clay.
Oh, this is nonsense. Ridiculous.
And then, when you learned that the woman for whose love you were willing to commit murder was through with you, you took Michelson's new flask to Feeler's home, confident that it would be found there.
Yes, and then he attacked me and stole that flask again in order to make it look like Feeler had done it.
Exactly, Archie. Mr. Saunders, the chances are that your fingerprints will be found on that whiskey flask, and they'll be able to trace the poison to wherever you purchased it. The chances are...
Oh, no, you don't. Careful now, all of you.
Guns bore me, Saunders.
Oh, yeah? I'm leaving.
You are not... Clay! Clay!
Yes, Mrs. Michelson, your husband has been there for some time.
Clay, are you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Well done, Mr. Michelson. I think you proved that an artist's life may indeed be exciting.
I have been an awful fool, Mr. Wolf.
Mr. Michelson, you might remember for the future that unreasoning and unjustifiable jealousy sometimes creates the very conditions that it fears.
You're being very kind to me, Mr. Wolf.
How can we ever thank you?
By prompt remittance of your check on receipt of my bill in the morning. Good day, Mr. and Mrs. Michelson.
Good day, Mr. Wolf.
Good day.
What's the matter, Archie? You look glum.
Yeah. I always have the lousiest luck.
Meaning?
A hectic case with two beautiful dames. Michelson gets one, the undertaker gets the other, and what do I get? Hey, that reminds me. You got a fee. I get paid.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story was written by Cheryl Hendricks and based on the famous characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Larry Dobkin as Archie Goodwin, and Betty Lou Gerson, Howard McNear, Dan O'Herlihy, Vic Perrin, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Beautiful Archer. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Next, Sam Spade. Later, William Bendix on NBC.
That's it. The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, broadcast from November 17, 1950. The Case of the Careless Cleaner with Sidney Greenstreet is heard on NBC. We have a salute to Sidney Greenstreet. We have two more radio shows with him all the way till 2 o'clock in the morning. But first, these words. Lisa, are you ready for hour two of the WGN Radio Theater?
Am I ready? Are you ready? That's the question.
Lisa just got back from Las Vegas.
I did.
How was that?
Tell about my deep, dark suntan.
You went and saw David Copperfield, didn't you?
I saw David Copperfield, and I saw Terry Fader.
A ventriloquist?
You know me.
Lisa
I'm just
likes
mesmerized.
Those dummies. She loves being around dummies.
I just think that's fantastic.
Right, Mike? Yep.
Listen, I have the Charlie McCarthy dummy. I'm crazy about it.
I actually read a book on ventriloquism when I was younger as well. I was amused by it.
I used to pretend to do it. I don't think I was very good, but
yeah.
And I saw O at the Bellagio.
I don't think I want to stick my hand up any dolls
behind.
No, I'm not.
Hey, don't knock it till you try it, Carl.
You know, that's not my thing.
Hey, maybe you'd like it.
Nah, I don't think so. No, I don't think I would. You like that? You had a puppet? You had a little doll?
I had a Charlie McCarthy doll.
It was an actual Charlie McCarthy. Isn't that funny? As a kid, you had a Charlie McCarthy doll.
It was in a
and
trunk.
Here you are.
I know, talking about Charlie McCarthy.
Co-host of the WGN Radio Theater.
I know. See, it's weird.
It's a weird full circle type of thing.
Coincidence of events.
Yeah, and it's very weird, just period.
You're just
very
weird.
Very weird.
Do you still have it?
I don't, and I wish that I did.
You don't have a Charlie McCarthy doll anymore?
I want one.
I wonder if Candace Bergen has one.
If somebody wants to sell it to me, I'll buy it for at least 25 cents or so.
Yeah.
I really
You're a
do.
Big spender. You know
I
that?
Know. Well, you know.
How'd you do at the tables, at the blackjack tables?
I did
pretty good?
I didn't play this time.
You didn't
time.
Play?
No, I spent money instead of...
Oh,
I
you were buying
in,
jewelry?
Instead of,
Lisa
you know, losing it at the table.
Has a little bit of
affinity.
Affinity.
Or
there's
an affection.
The word thank you. Affection for jewelry.
I do like jewels.
And purses and shoes.
I bought a purse, shoes, and a necklace. Oh my God, Carl.
It was like I was there almost, right?
You were probably just spying on me.
Kinetic energy.
Energy,
yeah.
Yes.
We were just.
I'm just finishing your sentence.
Anyway, this is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. In this hour, we're going to tune into a radio adaptation of The Maltese Falcon, starring Humphrey Bogart and Sidney Greenstreet, along with Mary Astor, some other great actors as well. In our third hour, it's another Sidney Greenstreet radio show. It's a radio adaptation of the movie Across the Pacific. It has the same cast, Humphrey Bogart, Sidney Greenstreet, Mary Astor. And we're saluting Sidney Greenstreet on this edition, and it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress is the producer and star of the TV series Divorce, as a newly divorced woman who finds that making a fresh start is harder than she thought.
Sounds interesting.
And the winner will win $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best and my favorite deep dish pizza.
312-981-7200. That's the number to call. Here's a hint. This actress played Dolores Fuller, Ed Wood's girlfriend, in 1994's Ed Wood.
What kind of sick mind operates like that? And what about the-
this so-called Barbara character, that's obviously me.
All right, if you know who that is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We're back. You phoned us. This is the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
What kind of sick mind operates like that? And what about this so-called Barbara character? That's obviously me.
Hey, let's talk to Kathy from Franklin Park. Hey, Kathy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
You are right, Kathy. You are a winner. We are so happy to give you a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can check them out at loumalnati's.com and visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Thank you so much, Kathy. You are a winner.
Well, thank you very much.
Take care.
Thanks,
we're glad,
Kathy,
you're listening.
Okay. It's a salute to Sydney Greenstreet, and it's time for the Academy Award Theater. Now, this series adapted films to radio. The films of the stars of each film, the films or the stars of each film on this, Lisa, had to have been nominated or won an Oscar. In other words, you know, it was called Academy Award Theater, so
yeah.
It had a...
Gotcha.
I'm picking up on the words. Are you following on that?
I'm listening.
This series came to CBS Radio in 1946. It was sponsored by a drug company called E.R. Squibb and Sons. And the budgets of this half-hour show, super enormous, $5,000 an episode. And Squibb decided it was just too expensive, so they pulled the plug after 39 weeks on the air. The dramas included Henry Fonda in Young Mr. Lincoln, Cary Grant in Suspicion, Ronald Coleman in Lost Horizons, and Humphrey Bogart in The Maltese Falcon, along with Sidney Greenstreet. We have it for you right now. Let's go back to July 3rd, 1946. Here's part one of the very famous film noir detective story, The Maltese Falcon, on Academy Award Theater.
Presents Academy Award. Every week, Squibb brings you Hollywood's finest, the great picture plays, the great actors and actresses, techniques and skills chosen from the honor roll of those who have won or been nominated for the famous Golden Oscar of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. And now, E.R. Squibb and Sons, manufacturing chemist of the medical profession since 1858, bring you the distinguished star, Mr. Humphrey Bogart, who as Best Actor of the Year was nominated for the 1943 Academy Award. You will also hear Miss Mary Astor, who won the 1941 Academy Award as Best Supporting Actress of the Year, and Sidney Greenstreet, who was nominated for the 1941 Academy Award as Best Supporting Actor. Tonight, Mr. Bogart, Miss Astor, and Mr. Greenstreet will play the famous roles they created for the screen in The Maltese Falcon, the thrilling mystery which was nominated as Best Production of the Year for the 1941 Academy Award.
My name is Spade, Sam Spade. License number 357896, issued by the Police Department of San Francisco. Occupation, private detective. Sometimes known as Private Eye. My files in the case of the Maltese Falcon are closed, but I've got the Maltese Falcon. I got it, and some dough. My partner got murdered, and a very slick chick went up for life. I'll tell you about it. This slick dame comes to see me one day, gives me a song and dance about her sister and a guy called Floyd Thursby. She wants to get her sister back before her mother and father get in from Hawaii. I put my partner, Miles Archer, on the case. At night, he gets murdered. And so does this guy Thursby. I go around to the apartment where the dame is living, the one called Bridget O'Shaughnessy. She had something I seemed to go for.
Oh, Mr. Spade, come in.
I have come in.
Oh, yes, so you have. Mr. Spade, am I to blame for last night?
You warned us that Thursby was dangerous. Of course, you lied to us about your sister and all that, but that doesn't count. We didn't believe you.
Oh, help me, Mr. Spade. I need help so badly. I've no right to ask you, but I do ask you. Help me.
You won't need much of anybody's help. You're good. You're awful good. It's chiefly your eyes, I think, and that throb you get into your voice when you say things like, help me, Mr. Spade.
I deserve that. But, oh, the lie was in the way I said it, and not at all in what I said.
If I'm going to help you, I've got to have some sort of a line on your Floyd Thursby.
I met him in the Orient. We came here from Hong Kong last week.
Did he kill Archer?
Yes, certainly.
Picked a nice sort of playmate.
Only that sort could have helped me if he had been loyal.
How bad a hole are you actually in?
As bad as could be.
Physical danger?
Well, I'm not heroic. I don't think there's anything worse than death.
Then it's that.
It's that as surely as we're sitting here. Unless you help me.
Who killed Thursby? Your enemies or his?
I don't know. His, I suppose. I'm afraid. I don't know.
Who are these enemies?
Well, there's a small, dark man with white teeth and a smooth, dangerous, fat man.
Oh, this is hopeless. Well, how much money have you got?
I have about $500 left.
Give it to me. There's only 400 here.
I had to keep some to live on.
Okay. I'll be back as soon as I can. You needn't come to the door with me. I can let myself out. I went by the office then and found a dark little guy with very white teeth waiting for me. His name was Joel Cairo. He was a Greek.
Mr. Spade, I'm trying to recover an ornament that has been, shall we say, mislaid. I thought and hoped you could assist me.
Uh-huh.
The ornament is a statuette, the black figure of a bird. I'm prepared to pay the sum of $5,000 for its recovery, and no questions asked.
$5,000's a lot of money. It's a very interesting figure.
You will put your hands together at the back of your neck, Mr. Spade.
Huh? Oh, sure.
I shall shoot you if you try to stop me, Mr. Spade. But I must search your office.
You won't find anything but a pair of worn-out rubbers, a half pint of rum, and a pack of chewing gum.
We shall see. Please stand up. So.
Sure. This way?
No, the other way.
Sure. So I'll take the gun, Mr. Cairo. Now get up.
I am very slow in things like that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm still prepared to pay $5,000 for the return of the figure. Do you have it, Mr. Spade?
No.
If it is not here, why did you just risk serious injury to prevent my searching for it?
Well, I should sit around and let people come in and stick me up.
You wish some assurance of my sincerity? A retainer?
I might.
Say, $100?
You better make it $200. Thanks. Your first guess was that I had the bird. What's your second guess?
That you know where it is, or where you can get it.
Now, you're not hiring me to murder or do burglary, but to get back the figure in some lawful way. Say, from a dame with red hair, or a smooth, dangerous fat man.
Oh, so you know. You must beware of them. They would stop at nothing. May I have my pistol now?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'd forgotten it.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Spade, you will kindly clasp your hands behind your neck.
What the?
Don't move, Mr. Spade. This time I might shoot. I insist on searching your office.
Sure. Go ahead. I finally got rid of the Greek and started back for Bridges' apartment. Matter of fact, I had a hunch that the Greek was going there himself and started to tail his cab when a sad-faced guy poked something into my back and said...
Come on. The fat man wants to see you. Here he is, Mr. Gutman. The guy who was talking to the dame in the Greek.
Oh, Mr. Spade.
Mr. Gutman?
We begin well, sir. I distrust the man who talks too much.
I like to talk.
Of course, talking something you can't do judiciously unless you keep in practice.
Yeah.
Now, sir, we'll talk if you like. And I'll tell you right out that I'm a man who likes talking to a man who likes to talk.
Swell. Will we talk about the blackbird?
You're the man for me, sir. No beating about the bush, right to the point. Let us talk about the blackbird by all means. Mr. Spade, have you any conception of how much money can be got for that blackbird?
No.
Well, sir, if I told you half, you'd call me a liar.
No, not even if I thought so. But you just tell me what it is, and I'll figure out the profits.
You mean you don't know what that bird is?
Well, I know what it's supposed to look like. I know the value in human life you people put on it.
So Shaughnessy didn't tell you what it is? And Cairo didn't either?
He offered me $10,000 for it.
$10,000? And dollars, mind you, not even pounds. They must know what it is. Or do they? What is your impression?
I can't tell. They're both lying.
If they don't know, I'm the only one in the whole wide, sweet world who does.
Swell. When you've told me, that'll make two of us.
Mathematically correct, sir. But I don't know for certain that I'm going to tell you.
Oh, don't be foolish. You know what it is, I know where it is. That's why I'm here.
Well, sir, where is it?
Don't be silly.
You see, I must tell you what I know, but you will not tell me what you know. That is hardly equitable, sir. No, no. I don't think we can do business along those lines.
Yeah, well, think again and think fast. I can get along without you and keep that gunsel away from me while you're making up your mind. I'll kill him.
Well, sir, I must say you're the most violent temper.
Well, what are you wasting time for? You've got till 5:30. Then you're either in or out for keeps. Three characters and a black bird. Well, all I knew was my partner was dead and the cops were getting very uncooperative about the whole thing, including who killed Floyd Thursby. I thought I'd better get back to see that O'Shaughnessy dame before it was too late. And sure enough, it almost was.
They came here and took him away.
Took who away? Who?
The police. They wanted to talk to you, too. They took Mr. Cairo with them.
What was he doing here?
He came to talk about the bird.
What is this bird, this falcon that everybody's all steamed up about?
Suppose I wouldn't tell you anything at all about it. What would you do? Something wild and unpredictable?
Maybe.
Well, it's a black figure, as you know. Smooth and shiny of a bird. A hawk or falcon about 12 inches high.
Now, what makes it so important?
I don't know. They wouldn't tell me. But they promised me £500 if I helped them get it from the man who had it.
Go ahead.
They promised me £500 to help them, and I did. Then we found that Joel Cairo was going to take the falcon and desert Floyd and me, so we did that to Joel first.
You are a liar.
I am a liar. I've always been a liar.
Well, don't brag about it. Was there any truth at all in that yarn?
Some. Not very much.
Well, we've got plenty of time. I'll put some coffee on and we'll try again.
Oh, I'm so tired. So tired of lying and thinking up lies and not knowing what is a lie and what is the truth. Oh, darling, don't stare at me like that. Come closer, darling.
It is something to do while waiting. Why not?
Kiss me, Sam Spade. Kiss me.
Why not? That happens every time. I'll get it.
Be careful, darling.
Okay. Come on, you. He wants to see you.
Well, if it isn't the fat man's killer. Hello, pale face. How many did you bump off today?
Shut up. Cupman's waiting for you.
No kidding. What kept you?
Darling, what did he want?
He wants me. The fat man's been thinking things over.
She's already calling him darling. They haven't even kissed, and she's already calling him darling.
This is just too romantic for you, I think.
You know, I mean, that's pretty forward to be calling him darling, you know. What was that? What happened? Somebody hit sound effect? Yeah, oh, there we go. It's like a, yeah. Right?
It's like a, yeah.
What is she calling him darling so early in the relationship for?
She's feeling the love, Carl.
I don't know.
I don't know.
But remember, she lies.
Yes, she's yes. Cold-hearted woman that...
When it comes to romance, Carl is running the other way.
I don't run, I take a rocket ship.
That's what I said.
Bridget O'Shaughnessy there. Mary Astor reprising her film role along with Humphrey Bogart and also Sidney Greenstreet. This is a great radio adaptation of The Maltese Falcon from 1946. We'll get back to it. Then a little later, it's the same cast in Across the Pacific, another radio adaptation, as heard on the Gulf Screen Guild Theater, because we're saluting Sidney Greenstreet. And real quick, let's mention our Facebook page, Mike. We want our listeners to check out our Facebook page and to please like us.
Just hop on to Facebook and look up WGN Radio Theater, and there we are.
All right, our schedule's there. You can like us there. You can ask us questions.
You have to hop.
If you have suggestions.
On one foot.
Use a pogo stick. It's faster. And if you want to hear a certain radio show, just let us know, right?
Right.
Absolutely.
And we'll air. All right, we're back. It's 12:35. Thank you, Roger. And we will be back with Roger in just a little bit. He'll have more news more traffic. Now, there's not much traffic going on there at 12:30, right?
No.
I'd rather watch light. Roger dance up there. Now, that's fun.
If you don't call it dance, chair dancing.
Yeah, what? I could dance. I'll take it.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. When David Jennings was in that chair, he had a pink shirt. Now you have a pink shirt. Are you guys borrowing the same shirt or two different shirts?
We haven't done laundry all week, so we share.
Just sharing. Okay, yeah. So David's going home with no shirt on right about now?
Yeah, but that's okay.
Are you interested in that, Carl?
Well, I'm just trying to get the facts. I'm like Jack Webb. Yeah. Sergeant
the facts,
Joe Friday.
Ma'am.
I want the facts.
Ma'am.
I'm not necessarily need the facts for any particular reason. No. I just want the facts.
Just wondering what your interest in that might be.
Very little. you know what my interests are?
Yes,
classic
I do.
Radio shows.
I'm well aware
right,
of
Roger?
That.
Right,
Roger? Right? That's why we're compatible here.
Simpatico.
Yeah, I knew I mixed up the two words.
The reason why is because Roger knows his classic radio. I ask him questions sometimes, folks.
Yeah, I don't know the answers, but I appreciate it.
But he's really good at making things up really quickly.
No, he does. He knows his classic radio. He is an aficionado, as they say. Lisa, you're getting to be pretty good at this.
Thanks, Carl.
Mike Estella, he knows his stuff.
And I have to listen to a bunch of different ones, so yes.
Yeah.
We're forced into it.
And I think it's kind of interesting, sort of fascinating, that when a movie would come out back in the 1930s or 40s, these radio shows would adapt it. They would take like a 90-minute or two-hour movie, take the original script and adapt it. They have to really kind of change it because the script was written for a visual medium.
Completely.
And then they would change it and make it work on radio and make it much shorter. They'd have to edit it down to like this, for instance, this Maltese Falcon show with the commercials, all this kind of stuff. It's probably 22, 23 minutes of content, and it was probably a 75 or 80 minute film. And you get the gist of it. It's really, you don't feel like you're missing anything by listening to this. All the main scenes are in there. They're following the black bird, you know, and Bogart with his Humphrey, you know, with his, Bogart with his Sam Spade isms and all that, mm-hmm. And Sidney Greenstreet's terrific as Casper Gutman in this. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get back to it. Why don't we, right? Let's hear the conclusion now to The Maltese Falcon on Academy Award Theater.
Well, Mr. Spade, I must apologize for sending for you in this fashion.
Now, never mind. Let's talk about the bird.
All right. Let's. What do you think of the order of the Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem?
Crusaders or something, weren't they?
Very good. In 1539, these crusading knights persuaded Emperor Charles V to give them the island of Malta. He made but one condition. They were to pay him each year the tribute of a falcon in acknowledgement that Malta was still under Spain. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
Have you any conception of the extreme, immeasurable wealth of the order of that time?
Well, I imagine they were pretty well fixed.
They were rolling in wealth, sir. They hit upon the happy thought of sending the emperor for the first year's tribute, not an insignificant live bird, a glorious golden falcon, encrusted from head to foot with the finest jewels in their coffer. Allow me to replenish your drink, sir. Well, what do you think of these knights?
I don't know.
Well, sir, the glorious falcon never reached Spain. Buccaneers raided the galleon. In 1713, the bird showed up in Sicily. In 1840, in Paris. And it had by that time acquired a coat of black enamel, looking like nothing but a fairly interesting black statue. In 1923, a Greek dealer found it in an obscure Paris shop. He knew what it was. I heard about it in London and rushed over to buy it. But the Greek was murdered and the falcon gone. That was 23 years ago. For 23 years, I searched for the bird. I traced it to the home of a Russian general, Kemedov. But he wouldn't sell, even though he knew nothing of its value. I was forced to send my agents after it. They got it, sir. But I haven't got it. But I'm going to get it, sir. How soon are you willing to produce the falcon?
A couple of days.
That is satisfactory. Well, sir, here's a fair bargain and profits large enough for both of us.
What's your idea of a fair bargain?
Shall I say 100,000?
Why not?
What did you say to a quarter of a million?
Well, then you think the dingus is worth a million, no?
Why not?
Yeah, why not? Hey, I feel kind of funny, Gutman. that drink.
My dear man, how could you suggest anything so cruel?
I...
Wilma, Wilma.
Yeah. The drink got him, huh?
Put your guns away, Wilma. You must learn to be subtle in these things, like me.
Hot like a light, huh? Well, I owe him something, the louse. He thinks he's tough. Let's see if he can take this.
That's enough, Wilma. You kicked him enough. It'd never do to kill him here. Besides, Wilma, you know how I hate the sight of blood.
I guess the name of Sam Spade was a cinch for the back page obituaries, but I came out of it somehow and managed to get up and stagger out of that apartment. I went around to the hotel where Joel Cairo had a room and made a deal with a house dick to let me search it. All I could find was a newspaper in the wastebasket folded back to the steamship news. It was a list of arrivals and one was marked. It said, 8:07 a.m., the La Paloma from Hong Kong. That was good enough for me. I got a cab and rode down to the docks. The La Paloma was on fire and burning beautifully. I went back to my office to hold my aching head and think things over when the door opened. And a tall guy in a long black overcoat stood there with a package in his hands, making gurgling noises before he fell like a tree. He should have. He was dead. I took a good look at him. He was the mate off the La Paloma. I unwrapped his package and there it was. The black bird. The Maltese falcon. I grabbed the phone and listened. It was Bridget O'Shaughnessy, and she said she was in trouble. I found her shivering in a dark corner of an office building. I took her and the falcon home to my apartment. I put her on the couch. I put the falcon in the icebox where no one would think to look for anything, including ice. I came back in and switched on the lights and found a surprise party waiting to greet me.
Well, sir, we're all here. Now let's sit down and be comfortable and talk.
Sure. Get away from me, Gunsel. You're not going to frisk me.
Stand still.
Shut up. Put your paw on me and I'm going to make you use that gun. Ask your boss if he wants me shut up before we talk.
Never mind, Wilma. You're certainly a most headstrong individual, Mr. Spade. Well, let's be seated.
You too, Cairo. You can put down your gun, too.
Of course, Mr. Spade. I was only using caution, as it were.
You ready, Gutman? Are you ready to make the first payment and take the falcon off my hands?
Well, sir, as to that, here are $10,000, sir.
Oh, we were talking about more money than this.
Yes, sir, we were. But this is genuine coin of the realm, sir. With a dollar of this, you can buy $10 of talk. Besides, more of us would be taken care of now.
Well, that may be, but I've got the falcon.
I should not think it would be necessary to remind you, Mr. Spade, that though you may have the falcon, yet we certainly have you.
Yes, I'm trying not to let that worry me. We'll come to the money later. There's another thing to be taken care of first. We've got to have a fall guy. The police have to have a victim. Somebody they can stick for those three murders.
Two. Only two murders, Mr. Spade. Thursby undoubtedly killed your partner.
All right, two. What difference does it make? The point is, we've got to give the police...
Come, Mr. Spade. You can't expect us to believe at this late date. You are the least afraid of the police. Or that you're not able to handle...
I'm up to my neck, Gutman. I've got to come through with somebody, a victim, when the time comes. If I don't, I'll be it. Let's give him the gun, Sully. Actually, he did shoot Thursby and the other one, didn't he? Anyway, he's made to order for the part. Let's turn him over to the cops.
Get up on your feet. I've taken all the writing from you I'm going to take.
Get up, shoot it out.
No, Wilma, don't shoot.
There, Gunsel, that'll take care of you. Put him on the sofa. Sorry, Bridget, but you seem to have recovered.
I'm all right.
Good. Well, gentlemen, there's our fall guy. And now, gentlemen, you agree or I'll turn the falcon and the whole lot of you in.
Mr. Spade, I don't like this. What if we took matters into our own hands and killed you?
You won't, or you'll never find the falcon.
True, but there are other ways we could make you talk.
No, I'd take it and make you kill me, and then you'd end up the same way.
I believe you would, too.
Well...
I've always felt toward Wilma like a father. But you can have him.
Swell, let's get the details fixed. Why did he shoot Thursby?
Thursby was Miss O'Shaughnessy's ally. We thought in disposing of him, we would teach Miss O'Shaughnessy to patch up her differences with us regarding the falcon.
And the mate from the La Paloma.
That was Miss O'Shaughnessy's fault.
Cairo got in touch with me when he saw the notice of the ship's arrival. He remembered that the mate and Miss O'Shaughnessy had been friendly in Hong Kong. He called on this man, but he, with Miss O'Shaughnessy and the bird, slipped through our fingers. We followed them to her apartment, and Wilma shot the mate as he was coming down the fire escape. He shot him many times, but the man was tough, and he did not drop the falcon. We persuaded Miss O'Shaughnessy to call your office, but unfortunately she did not call in time to prevent you from meeting the mate and getting the falcon.
I see.
And now, sir, would it be presumptuous if we asked to see the falcon?
Okay. It's in my icebox.
Icebox, I see. Oh, you are a character, sir. Yes, very, very clever of you, very.
I've got it. I've got it.
Bring it in here at once.
Here. Wrapped in this.
Now, after 23 years, it is it. We'll make sure. Give me your knife, sir.
Yes.
I'll peel off some of this disfiguring enamel. It's a fake.
All right, O'Shaughnessy, you've had your little joke. Now tell us about
it. No, Sam, no, that's the one I got from the Russian, I swear.
You bungled it, Gutman. You and your stupid attempt to buy it. The Russian caught on how valuable it was. No wonder we had so little trouble stealing it. You imbecile! You bloated idiot!
Yes. This is the Russian's hand. There's no doubt of it. Well, sir, what do you suggest? Shall we stand here and shed tears and call each other names? Or shall we go to Istanbul and interview our Russian friend?
Go to Istanbul?
For 23 years, I have wanted that little item and have been trying to get it. If I must spend another year on the quest, well, that will be an added expenditure in time only.
I go with you. Wilma's gone.
Wilma's gone. So he has. That makes it imperative that we go too. Oh, by the way, sir, I'll travel you for my envelope containing the $10,000.
I kept my end of the bargain, but I'll settle for $1,000 for expenses.
Thank you. I'll allow you the $1,000.
That'll take care of my time.
Now, sir, we'll say goodbye to you unless you care to undertake the Istanbul expedition with us. Don't? That's too bad. Well, sir, the shortest farewells are best. Adieu. And to you, Miss O'Shaughnessy, I leave the rarer avis there on the table as a little memento. The Maltese falcon.
Shaughnessy, talk.
Where should I begin?
You came to me and asked me to have Thursby followed. I put my partner on it. He followed Thursby. He was killed. You must have told Thursby he was being followed.
I told him, yes, but please believe me, Sam. I wouldn't have told him if I'd thought Floyd Thursby would kill your partner.
Miles hadn't many brains, but he had too many years' experience as a detective to be caught like that by a man he was shadowing up a blind alley with his gun tucked away in his hip and his overcoat buttoned. But he'd have gone up there with you, Angel. He was just dumb enough for that. And then you could have stood as close to him in the dark as you liked and put a bullet through him.
Don't talk like that to me, Sam. You know I didn't
Stop
know.
It. Why did you shoot him?
I didn't mean to at first. I can't look at you and tell you this,
You
Sam.
Thought Thursby would tackle him. If he got Thursby, then you were rid of him. If Thursby won, you had something on him. Enough to be rid of him for good. Wasn't that it?
Something like that.
But when Thursby backed down, you took the gun and did the job yourself.
Oh, Sam, sweetheart, from the very first instant I saw you, I knew.
You angel. Well, if you get a good break, you'll be out of San Quentin in 20 years, and you can come back to me then. I hope they don't hang you, precious, by that sweet neck.
You know deep down in your heart that in spite of anything I've done, I love you.
I don't care who loves who. I'm not going to play the sap for you. I won't walk in Thursby's, and I don't know how many others' footsteps. You killed my partner, and you're going over for it.
Why must you do this to me, Sam? Surely your partner wasn't as much to you
as... Listen, listen to me. This won't do any good. You'll never understand me, but I'll try once and then give it up. Listen, when a man's partner is killed, he's supposed to do something about it. And it happens we're in the detective business. Well, when one of your organization gets killed, it's bad business to let the killer get away with it. Bad all around. Bad for every detective everywhere.
You can't send me to the... Sam, you can't. You love me. You love me.
Maybe I do. What of it? Maybe next month I won't. I've been through it before. I'll have some rotten nights after I've sent you over, but that'll pass. I want you, sure, but I won't take you at the price because all of me wants to, regardless of consequences. Because you counted on that with me the same as you counted on that with all the others.
Sam, darling, kiss me, kiss me.
Sure. Sure, baby.
Sam. What are you doing? Who are you calling?
The cops, baby. The cops to come and take you away.
Bidding you good night until next Wednesday at the same time, when you're invited to listen again to Academy Award, presented by the House of Squibb, a name you can trust. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Here's looking at you, kid. Humphrey Bogart there in the Maltese Falcon. He reprises role of Sam Spade detective. Sidney Greenstreet, Casper Gutman on that. Mary Astor was Bridget O'Shaughnessy. She wasn't Irish or anything in that.
No,
Bridget O'Shaughnessy.
I wouldn't imagine so.
And it was sponsored by the House of Squibb, is heard on CBS. Very expensive radio show back then. $5,000 a half hour to put this show together back in 1946. One of our listeners texted us and said that the Maltese Falcon was in the movie theaters the day that Pearl Harbor was bombed. And that's true, because in 1941, the movie came out in 1941. And, of course, we were bombed on December 7th of 1941.
He also said that, or she, Falcon netted $16 million on a $1 million investment.
The Maltese Falcon.
Yep.
It, on a $1 million investment, $16 million gross, not bad. It's still making money today on DVD and every other form of distribution. So very cool. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on our Sidney Greenstreet tribute here on the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, Roger. I like this song. This is a good one. Do-si-do. This is a great song.
I'd lose it all.
It's close. You're
is
close.
It lose it all or give it all? Or what
no,
is he saying?
I think you're very off.
Yeah, I think it's not quite close.
I think he's saying I'd lose it all.
I think that's what he's saying.
Listen,
let's see,
here it is.
I'd leave it all.
Give it all. I'd give it all.
Maybe
but you know
it.
What? We just
okay,
got the
ask Roger. He knows this. Roger, do you know?
I don't know this
no.
song.
No.
I think
it's
a cool
song.
All right, are you ready?
I don't even know who the artist is.
I'm going to say it's I'd leave it all. L-E-A-V-E. But I've been 100% wrong on every bet that I've made on the WGN Radio Theater.
You're correct. WGN Radio Theater.
I'd leave it all.
Leave it all.
I win one. Hey, you can't lose them all.
You bet with yourself, so it doesn't really count anyway.
I'd leave it all. Very cool.
Who's the team. Artist on this?
This is
a man named George Ezra.
Oh,
George Ezra. Well, he is more than welcome on the WGN Radio Theater. Anytime he wants, he's a great singer. I love that song.
He can come.
And I love this radio show. And I love you, Lisa, and I love you, Shane. I love you, Roger.
Carl's getting a moment.
Very emotional right now. Very emotional. I think it's because, you know, Humphrey Bogart sent Bridget O'Shaughnessy right up the river there. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, sent her to jail. She's like, Sam.
I'm pulling the cops.
She's like, come on, don't kid. He's like, you're taking the fall. I like that. I like that Humphrey Bogart guy. You know?
You could learn a few things.
She took the fall. You know, she killed his partner, Roger.
Yeah.
She took the fall.
Yeah, that dame.
And then there was Peter Lorre. He wasn't in this, though. There was a guy playing him, though. But
you just like to do that voice.
It's
in his repertoire.
Do you remember? Hey, Roger, do you remember the movie Arsenic and Old Lace?
Oh, I love that movie. It's hilarious.
Right. And Peter Lorre was in that. He was Dr. Einstein, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think. I'll think of it, but I'm trying to think who played the...
Well, Cary Grant.
Cary Grant, of course. Yeah, he was Mortimer Brewster.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think of who the... I know the name of the kind of the Boris Karloff-looking guy. Trying to think who that Raymond Massey was. It Raymond Massey?
I think
it was Raymond Massey. And so when that play came to my school, because I could do the Peter Lorre voice.
You got the part?
I got the part.
Look at you.
Yes. Yes.
And was this what, it like was a lot of fun. What, 20s was
it? Yeah, it was in the 18. It was an aught. It was aught nine.
Aught nine.
Back in aught nine. Yeah.
1944.
Let's see. What I was probably, it was 19. 20. It was like 1979 or 1980. 79 or 80.
Memories.
I was a young.
Raymond Massey.
Was it Raymond Massey? Yeah. Young whippersnapper that I was. Mm-hmm. I was old Mortimer, you know. With, you know, Johnny. I used to call him Johnny. Yeah, it was a fun play. It was
Everett Horton.
Everett Horton, yeah. Movie, yeah. It's a great movie. You know that Cary Grant said it was his least favorite movie he ever did. Yeah, he said he couldn't stand it.
Well, it's very fast-paced, and it's very frenetic.
Yeah, and I think he said he donated, I don't know if it was this film or another film, he donated all of his money that he made to the war effort because he just hated the film. He didn't want any money from it or anything.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like you, Carl.
I have a radio adaptation. I have a radio adaptation
of
that.
Oh, yeah.
We'll play it sometime.
Well, have we done Cary Grant yet? Have you done...
I donate money for certain causes, Lisa.
Are you saying
I don't? I didn't say that.
I've donated.
I would not insinuate anything.
I'm a big donator.
You're a big
something
or another.
Donut? What? That, no, donator. Donutter.
Well, Roger,
he's big on donuts.
Roger, you know what's in the middle of a shebang donut, don't you? The whole shebang. Yeah, he liked that one. Look at it. He liked that one.
Shrubbing his head.
I need some water.
You know what? I digress, though. We need to get into the show. this is hour three of the Slap Happy WGN Radio Theater. We have a salute to Sydney Greenstreet. We're going to tune in to a radio adaptation of Across the Pacific with Humphrey Bogart, Sydney Greenstreet, and Mary Astor. I guess she was sent up the river, but she's back here across the Pacific on this show. I don't know how that happened, but she is. She's got a double life. She's got she was reincarnated or something.
Time off for good behavior.
Yeah, time off, maybe. That could be. So we have that for you. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in an episode of Shots Fired, which investigates a series of racially charged shootings in a Tennessee town.
All right, if you know who this celebrity is, call us 312-981-7200. You'll win a Lou Malnati's.
$25 gift certificate for
Lou Malnati's. All right, so here's a hint. He played Dr. Leo Marvin in 1991's What About Bob?
So the real question is, what is the crisis, Bob? What is it that you are truly afraid of?
All right, if you know who that is, very famous voice, call us 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break. You know what, Lisa?
What? Carl.
If you ever don't want to do radio anymore, you could always become a butcher.
A butcher?
Yeah.
Thanks, Carl. TheAwFactor.com.
Yeah, right? She butchered that commercial, so why not become a butcher?
Why do you say that?
Oh, you know I'm just giving you a hard time.
No, I don't know that.
I'm winking.
No, I don't see any winking.
I'm going to try to do this without butchering it, all right? Weekday mornings, 4 to 10. It has everything you need to know and some things you just need to see. WGN-TV Morning News is Chicago's must-watch morning news. That's how you do it, Lisa. Okay.
Biz. I hope you get some hate mail on that one. We have Chuck on the line from Forest Park. I think he'll be nicer to me. How are you, Chuck?
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm feeling a little low. Carl just beat me up a little bit.
Oh, my gosh.
Chuck.
Milk the audience now for the hate mail now, Lisa.
Chuck, help me out. Who is that celebrity?
Richard Dreyfuss.
You are a winner, Chuck. I'm so happy that you won because you get a $25 gift card from Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can check them out online at loumalnati's.com. Visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Chuck, thank you so much for calling in with the right answer.
I thank you. There's one right down the street from me.
Oh, excellent. Perfect. Have a great pizza.
All right. Thank you, Chuck. All right. It's time now for Humphrey Bogart, Sydney Greenstreet, and Mary Astor in Across the Pacific. They all starred in this movie, and it was done on radio in 1943, January 25th to be exact, on the Gulf Screen Guild Theater. And here's a little information on this series, Lisa.
I'm not listening.
It had leading Hollywood stars performing in radio adaptations of their popular motion pictures. It debuted in 1939 and ran until 1952. That's a long run. It had many different titles, including the Gulf Screen Guild Theater, the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater, and the Camel Screen Guild Theater. And here's an interesting stat. The fees, this is very cool, Lisa, the fees that the stars would typically charge were donated to the Motion Picture Relief Fund to help support the creation and maintenance of the Motion Picture Country Home for Retired Actors.
Oh, that's
very
nice
clause. All right, let's tune this in. Part one now of Across the Pacific on the Gulf Screen Guild Theater.
Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players. The Screen Guild play tonight, Across the Pacific. The starring players...
This is Humphrey Bogart.
This is Mary Astor.
This is Sidney Greenstreet.
Tonight, Lady Esther welcomes you to a suspenseful program of espionage and counter-espionage. Across the Pacific, starring Humphrey Bogart as Captain Rick Leland, a United States Army intelligence officer, Mary Astor as Alberta Marlowe, and Sidney Greenstreet as Dr. Lorenz, a spy in the employ of the Japanese government.
Are you sure that Dr. Lorenz is the head of this Jap spy ring, General Rogers?
Yes, Captain Leland.
Then why don't you just arrest him?
Well, that wouldn't solve the problem, Captain. We must know what Dr. Lorenz is planning. No, Captain, I'm afraid you're going to have to suffer the disgrace of a dishonorable discharge if we're going to trap Dr. Lorenz.
Very well, sir.
Of course, you know what you're letting yourself in for. No one but you and I will know that the evidence placed against you at the court-martial will be faked.
No one, sir?
Well, Colonel Hart in New York and Smith, our... operative in Panama will know, but your fellow officers won't.
Oh, well, they're not going to think very much of me, are they?
Almost certainly not. But the more authentic we can make your disgrace appear, the better your chance of catching Lorenz. Do you want to withdraw from the operation?
I guess I can take it, sir. Start the court-martial.
Captain Leland, the court by secret written ballot finds you guilty as charged and sends you to be dismissed from the service of the Army of the United States.
Well, that was the situation Captain Rick Leland faced. Forced to sacrifice everything he had gained during 10 years of splendid service, suffer the bitter enmity of his fellow officers, on the chance that he might catch Dr. Lorenz.
Pardon me, sir.
Yes, Captain Leland?
Well, General Rogers knew what he was doing. Immediately after my court-martial, Dr. Lorenz showed the interest in me that General Rogers had anticipated. For weeks, our operatives have been trying to book passage out of Halifax on the Genoa Maru, a Jap freighter carrying Dr. Lorenz to the Orient. And for weeks, they'd been getting turned down. But they took me, a disgraced ex-coast artillery officer, aboard right away. That's where I met Alberta Marlowe, just as the Genoa Maru left her dock. Don't look now, baby, but there's a man following you.
What?
How are you?
Aren't we being just a little premature?
Oh, I don't know. On a boat carrying only 4 passengers, we're going to know each other eventually. Why not now?
That's reasonable. I'm Alberta Marlowe.
And I'm Rick Leland. Would you mind stepping into the light so I can see your face? Oh, you better pinch me.
I don't think I know you well enough for that yet.
A pretty girl on a boat with no college boys, no handsome officers, no eligible men of any description. It's wonderful.
Have you traveled a lot, Mr. Leland?
Some. Never in such beautiful company.
Good night, Mr. Leland.
No, don't go. Let's sit in the salon and talk.
I'm sorry. I hope I'll see you again.
Yes, yes. I imagine you will. On a boat this size, we may run into each other. Now, that wasn't the best start a romance ever had. Well, I had to file Alberta's attractions away for future reference and concentrate on Dr. Lorenz. The doc was concentrating on me, too. And the night before we were due to dock in New York, he tried to loosen up my tongue by getting me drunk.
Certain remarks you dropped on deck this morning, Mr. Leland. I gather you're quite well informed in matters pertaining to the United States Navy.
Yeah, I know a little bit about it.
Were you perhaps in the Navy?
Nope. Coast Artillery, Army.
Oh, how interesting. Were you stationed in Panama?
Part of the time.
I hope you don't think I'm too inquisitive.
Not at all. You're furnishing the whiskey.
It's hardly an excuse for asking a man his history.
I haven't got any history. I was in the Army. I got kicked out. I went to Canada and tried to join their army, but they wouldn't have me.
Can't understand that.
Simple enough. They don't want men kicked out of another army.
What do you plan to do now?
Well, I still have some friends in the canal zone, I think. Maybe I can pick up a few bucks. Then when I get to the Orient, I'll hire out to whoever will pay for my services.
It's very interesting, Mr. Leland. I can't tell you how I sympathize.
Thanks, Doc.
Do you intend to stay aboard the Genoa Maru when we dock in New York tomorrow? Or do you perhaps have friends there, Mr. Leland?
Well, I doubt if I have any friends left, but I'm going to give at least one of them a chance to kick me out of his office.
Well, it's good to see you, Captain Leland.
Thank you, sir.
Well, how are you and the genial Dr. Lorenz making out?
I think he's rising to the bait, Colonel.
Well, don't be too sure of anything. Lorenz is no chump, or he wouldn't have lasted so long with the Japanese.
No, he isn't exactly naive. I had to shake a guy getting here. Started to trail me right from the Genoa Maru.
Well, be very careful, Captain Leland. You're entirely surrounded by enemies every second you're on that boat.
Yes, sir. Oh, incidentally, there's a girl aboard the Genoa Maru.
Oh, yeah.
Alberta Marlowe.
Yes, we're investigating her. She makes an effort to convince everyone that she comes from Medicine Hat. As a matter of fact, she owns an exclusive women's wear shop right here in New York. Last year, she made 8 trips to Europe.
Well, they might have been buying trips for her shop.
Of course. Then again, they might not. If she's on the level, how could she get aboard the Genoa Maru?
Yes, that's true.
What's Miss Marlowe like, Captain Leland?
Well, you remember the girl you dreamed about marrying when you were 16? Well, this is her in the flesh.
I understand. Well, Captain, the Genoa Maru will be sailing shortly. You'd better get back to your ship and Dr. Lorenz and the girl I was going to marry when I was 16.
Yes, sir. Well, Alberta, what do you think of your trip on the Genoa Maru?
It's some experience for a girl from Medicine Hat, Rick.
Is that a gag, or do you really come from a place called Medicine Hat?
What's wrong with Medicine Hat, except that it's cold in winter, hot in summer, and nothing ever happens there?
Ah, you happen there, baby. That's good enough for me. Are you by any chance, a wealthy girl, I hope?
No. My father was a farmer. I work in the 10-cent store in Medicine Hat. I sell peanut brittle.
Well, I'm used to bad luck. I'll probably end up having the captain marry us on the boat.
Oh, no, you won't. I want a church wedding.
Oh.
By the way, you lived in Panama. Did you happen to know a man named Morton? Dan Morton?
Yes, I remember something about him. Planter, I think. Kind of eccentric. Why?
Oh, some people in Halifax told me to look him up.
Oh, do? He might take a fancy to you and leave you all his money. Then you and I'll be in fine shape.
I'm not so obsessed with money as you are. I can get along without money.
You stick to me, baby, and you'll get a lot of practice at it.
I certainly pity the woman you ever marry.
Oh, I won't ever marry.
You aren't married, are you, Rick?
Uh-huh. You keep asking questions like that. What'll happen to our romance?
What'll happen to it anyway if you don't shave?
Oh, now, Alberta, you wouldn't let a little 5 o'clock shadow stand between us.
I certainly would.
That isn't very tactful. Do I say anything about your dishpan hands?
Good morning, Miss Marlowe. Mr. Leland.
Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Doc.
I enjoy listening to you two, if you'll permit me.
Oh, you can referee.
Relationships between modern young Americans seem most unusual to a man of my years.
You give your lovemaking a peculiar assault and battery to it.
It's the same principle as a prize fighter going into training before a big fight, Doc.
Well, your sparring partner is checking out now, Rick. I'll see you this afternoon.
I'll see you later.
Bye, Doctor.
Goodbye. Miss Marlow is a very charming young woman, Mr. Leland. I am glad to see that you're so interested in her.
Oh, you are? Well, thanks, Doc.
Not at all. You see, I'm very interested in you, Mr. Leland.
I know. Everybody falls for my pretty brown eyes.
Don't be facetious, Mr. Leland. One night you told me about your trouble in the Army. I'd like to hear more about that.
Why not? It's known in every Army post in this hemisphere. I got in a jam with a dame. I needed dough. I had access to regimental funds. I borrowed from it. Meaning to put the money back, of course.
Of course.
But they found out before I could. Well, you write your own finish.
Whatever that finish is to be, you'll need money. Here's $350. You can have more when you want it. Within reason, of course.
Now, let's hear my side of the deal.
I never discuss being a traitor with a man. You'll find it easier if you don't think about that part of it.
Go ahead.
Very well. In a day or two, you'll talk to me about certain military installations in the vicinity of both Balboa and Cristobal. With particular reference to anti-aircraft emplacements, railway guns, and ammunition dumps.
Well, that ought to be worth quite a lot.
Find me quite generous. And now, having committed yourself to acting as my agent, I wouldn't want you to change your mind. That might turn out to be most fatally unfortunate.
Yes, I get it. Now, when do you want this information?
When we arrive in Panama. Good day, Mr. Leland.
Yeah. Good day.
And so the curtain falls on Act One of Across the Pacific, starring Humphrey Bogart as Rick Leland, Mary Astor as Alberta Marlowe, and Sidney Greenstreet as Dr. Lorenz.
All right, we'll get back to Across the Pacific after the news. And Sidney Greenstreet, Humphrey Bogart, Mary Astor in this. I'll take a sirloin, a couple of pounds of sirloin, three pork chops, and maybe a pound of hamburger, Lisa. Could you have that wrapped for me?
Yeah, I'll get right on it. Thanks
Thank
a lot.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right, we're back. I needed a little wake-up music like that.
Is that all you need?
This is way past my bedtime.
I have an apple for
Shame.
You.
Shame. I tell you what, man.
If you're nicer to me, I might give it to you.
10:30, I'm out.
Yeah, you know what, Carl? Usually you're complaining about Lisa falling asleep.
Yeah.
She falls asleep. You tell us that she falls asleep in the studio. But I was walking back to the weekend producer's office there, and it seemed like you may have been nodding off on the leather couch in the green room.
Was I snoring?
Nah, it was close.
I think I lost a little weight. I'm not snoring as much, I don't think. When I had put on a couple, I packed on a couple over the winter, and my snoring, I think, level went up a little. But then I lost a few pounds, and I'm not snoring as loudly. I mean, I'm certainly not snoring as loud as Lisa does. You should hear this girl when she falls. You've heard it.
Yeah, I hear it every Saturday.
Would you not agree with him?
It sounds like we're at O'Hare Airport. Planes are taking off.
You are both equal parts in the sleep.
Let me tell
Saturday
you
night.
Something. Carl's got a little sassy mean streak going here today, right?
No, not in the least.
Well, just
not
a little
in
edge
the
of,
least.
You know,
Absolutely
edge of Carl
not.
Coming through. His true personality is coming through here.
I want a rump roast, too. I want a little rump roast.
Let me wrap that up for you,
yes,
sir.
Yes, please. Look at Roger up there. Roger, you like the rump roast? No? All right.
He's
it's actually
staying
good.
Out of this.
How
He's
about
smart.
A, do you like a butt steak? I like a butt steak, too.
That's, I can't touch that one.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
And actually, you know what my favorite steak is, Lisa? And I know you don't eat meat. My favorite steak is a New York strip. I love a New York strip. You know?
Good.
Just want to let you know that. So
I'm happy to hear that.
All right.
I will file that away.
Like? When you're going to get a good steak, what do you like?
A real good ribeye with a nice marble
ribeye's
in it.
Ribeye's good, yeah. Mm. Roger?
God.
How about you?
I'll go between a really... good filet, the kind that just like slices like paper.
Yeah.
Or a great skirt steak off the grill.
Really? Like a skirt
steak?
Oh,
I love skirt steaks.
Yeah.
I make some really good ones.
You put a skirt steak on there in high heat for like 25 seconds each side? Yeah. That's a good steak.
You know what else is good? When you take a skirt steak and you wrap it around a butt steak. It's kind of nice, too. Don't
I'll
you
be
think
up here
so?
If you need me.
Yeah, I get to use my thing again. That's pretty.
Thank God this is a show that primarily plays old-time radio.
Yes, it does. Ooh. We
yes,
do.
You said it.
Yes, indeed. All right, so we're listening to Humphrey Bogart, Sidney Greenstreet, Mary Astor in Across the Pacific. Let's tune in the conclusion now on the Gulf Screen Guild Theater.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of Across the Pacific, starring Humphrey Bogart as Captain Rick Leland, Mary Astor as Alberta Marlowe, and Sidney Greenstreet as Dr. Lorenz.
When we reached Panama, Dr. Lorenz and Alberta Marlowe joined me in checking into the Pan American Hotel, which was run by an old friend of mine, Sam Wing. The day after we landed, Alberta received a mysterious phone call and disappeared without even a goodbye. I was sitting in my room, trying to figure out how to trace her without arousing any suspicion, when Lorenz called for his military information.
Good afternoon, Mr. Leland.
Oh, hello, Doc. Sit down. What's on your mind?
Well, Mr. Leland, now that we're in Panama, I think it's time you began to earn your money.
Okay. Where shall I begin?
The Pedro Miguel Locks will be a good place for a starter. How many batteries are there? What are their calibers?
Anti-aircraft or the heavy stuff?
Begin with the 16-inch guns.
Let's see. The last time I was down here, 2 years ago, there were double railroad guns east and west, two twin 16-inch concrete embrasures, half a mile north. That setup's probably been revised by now.
Revised and augmented considerably, Mr. Leland. But your information was quite correct for its time.
Testing me, eh?
Yes. Now we go on to something of real value. What specific knowledge have you of the military plane patrol over the canal area?
Well, 2 years ago...
What happened 2 years ago doesn't interest me. What I want is the current schedule of patrol plane. When the flights take off, exactly what areas they cover, at what altitude they conduct their reconnaissance, and the precise time of their return. I'll pay generously.
How much?
Shall we say $500?
Oh, why don't we say $1,500?
I said I'd pay generously, not foolishly.
Now, just a minute. The only place I could get that schedule is at Air Force headquarters. That's not too easy.
Now, make good deal. $1,500 if you get it today. $500 if the delivery is after midnight.
And why all the rush?
There's no rush.
Just $1,000 worth, eh?
Your place is to answer questions, Mr. Leland. Not ask them.
Well, as long as I couldn't ask any questions, I had to go out and look for the answers. And Alberta's room seemed like a good place to start. I began to take apart everything in the room.
Mr. Leland.
Huh?
Did you lose something?
No.
I trust I haven't disturbed you, Mr. Leland.
That's all right, Doc.
Has your search revealed anything?
Yes, yes. You'd be surprised how little girls wear these days. I was shocked.
I would consider it prudent of you, Mr. Leland, if you should cease your attentions to Miss Marlowe.
Yeah, why so, Doc?
Your interest in her is unqualifiedly romantic, is it not, Mr. Leland?
Between the two of us, Doc, I'm nuts about the lady.
Well, speaking as a father, I suggest that you might find a safer romance, something more permanent.
Oh, thank you, Doc. Incidentally, here's the patrol plane schedule.
And here's the money, Mr. Leland. $1,500. You may count it.
Just a second, Doc. I know I said $1,500, but I gotta look out for myself.
How much more do you want?
Let's say $500 more.
You overestimate your value to me, Mr. Leland. Actually, we have on file any information you can give us. It's merely that we like to check and recheck such data.
Ah, come off it, Doc.
You dodge me, Mr. Leland. Well, will you please hand me the phone?
Sure.
Thank you. Room clerk. This is Dr. Lorenz. I'm checking out. Have my bill ready, please.
Are you leaving, Doc?
Yes, Mr. Leland. And so, I believe, are you.
What was that, Doc?
Hit him, Tatsuko! Good work, Tatsuko.
Thanks, boss.
Hand me that envelope in Leland's hand, please. Thank you. Seems to be a very complete schedule. That's the 522 patrol, absolutely on time. Come, Totsuiko. We have no time to lose.
Sam. Sam Wing.
What's the matter, you, Ricky? How you catch a head bump trouble?
That's a present from my pal, Dr. Lorenz. Where is he?
He go 5 hours ago.
Checked out right after I was slugged. What about Miss Marlowe?
Oh, she no come back.
Probably made the getaway together.
You like movies, maybe. Go Japanese theater.
What's up, Sam?
You go Japanese theater. By and by, man come, sit next to you. Tell you something, maybe, see? Maybe find Dr. Lorenz. Maybe so, find Miss Marlowe.
You got a gun, Sam? Lorenz took mine.
No, Kendall, here. You go Japanese theater, sit down front.
Then you're ill?
Yeah.
I think things happen fast tonight. I take you to place.
Where?
Bountiful Plantation.
Now, why didn't I think of that? That's the place Alberta was asking me about on the boat.
What, senor?
That's nothing. Get me out of there fast. What are you stopping here for?
It is not safe to go any further than the car, Senor Leland. This is Bountiful Plantation, full of Japs.
Well, where do we go from here?
I go back to Cristobal. You go that way. See many Japs. Airplane. Landing field.
Airplane? Landing field?
Si, senor. Tonight they are loading torpedoes on airplane. I think they blow up Panama Canal.
Well, we've got to stop them.
No, not me, senor. I am poor man with many mouths to feed. You stop them. I go back to Cristobal pronto.
All right. How far is their landing field?
Oh, just a little way through the brush, senor. You will not have to go far until you hear them working.
Okay, thanks. Well, there must be 30 of the monkeys if I could only get over.
Stick them up, Captain Leland. I'll take your gun. Now turn around and walk to the plantation house. And don't get in heroic ideas, or you'll be just another dead Yank.
Do you really expect to...
Shut up. Keep walking.
I hate to put you to all this
I told
trouble.
You to shut up. Up the steps. Open the door.
Well, if it isn't my old playmate, Dr. Lorenz. Hey, Doc, tell this gorilla of yours to take his gun out of my back.
What? Why, Mr. Leland, I'm surprised. Indeed, I am. But you're forever furnishing surprises.
This'll be his last one.
Who's your rough playmate, Doc?
I'm sorry. Permit me to introduce Joe Totsuiko. Joe was a student at one of your American universities.
That's where I learned to be such a tough guy, Ricky.
And I see you know my name. We met before?
Well, in a way. I slugged you at the hotel.
Uh-huh.
Astounding recuperative powers you possess, Mr. Leland. Or should I say, Captain Leland. Amazing animal energy. The average man, given the punishment you received, would have been flat on his back for a week.
Now, you see, that comes from living a clean life. Oh, by the way, Doc, how did you manage to get all the parts for your plane and the torpedoes into the canal zone area?
Piece by piece and bit by bit, we brought them in cases of otherwise innocent farm equipment addressed to Dan Morton, Bountiful Plantation. Now, I think we'd better join Miss Marlowe and her father.
Alberta? Who's her father?
Dan Marlowe. Alias Dan Morton. Come, Mr. Leland.
Rick!
Alberta.
That's her father with her.
Her father?
Pathetic, is he not, sir? Yet beautiful in a sense that he's a perfect representation of what has happened to your Western civilization.
I'm afraid I don't get you.
Look at him. Eyes without focus. Flesh without feeling. Lips with no tongue. Utter decay. Mr. Marlowe is a thief. He absconded with his own company's funds. Escaped to Panama with his loot. Felt conscience and took to drink. Mr. Marlowe's dipsomania enabled us to introduce our nationals into his employ under the guise of workers and servants. In due time, he became a prisoner on rather than master. This plantation.
Rick, you aren't...
What?
You aren't with them?
Captain Leland is with the United States Army Intelligence, actively engaged in counter-espionage.
What do you figure in all this, Alberta?
I don't. I never did. I didn't know anything about what was happening down here. Now that you've seen Father, you know why I didn't want to tell you the truth about myself. But I was going to tell you anyway this afternoon when I got a telephone call to come out here immediately.
Nice timing, eh, Ricky?
Very nice, Joe.
I think you will discover, Captain Leland, that we have left absolutely nothing to chance.
Well, maybe you're right, Doc. Seems you are. I take my hat off to you.
Americans are famous for their sportsmanship. Time for me to leave you.
Going for a walk, Doc?
Yes, Captain. I must see that plane take off on its history-making flight. A flight that will culminate in the destruction of your vaunted Panama Canal. Keep them here for a time, Joe.
Then what happens, Doc?
Joe has his instruction. Goodbye, Miss Marlowe. Mr. Marlowe. And particularly, Captain Leland.
Well, there goes one of the most polite murderers who ever slit a throat.
You think you're pretty tough, don't you, Ricky?
In my modest, unassuming way, I try to hold my own. Do you guys really think you're going to win this war you're starting, Joe?
We're going to make an awfully good swing at it.
Well, cheer up. You'll all swing together.
Father, come back here. He's got a gun.
Get back, Marlowe. You don't...
Father, stop him, Rick. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Look out, Marlowe.
Stop him, Rick. Stop him. You shot him, Joe.
I'll shoot him again if he doesn't stop coming. Get away from me.
Give me his gun, Alberta. Fell on the floor. Come on, we've got to stop that plane before it takes off.
There's a path over here to the clearing. There's the plane, Rick.
Yes, I can see it. There's a machine gun guard right ahead of us.
Rick!
Shh. I got to sneak up on that machine gunner.
Rick, be careful.
Nothing's going to happen to me, baby. I hope. I'll get off this path and lie flat on the ground.
All right.
Wish me luck.
Good luck, Rick.
Thanks. I'll see you later.
I got him, baby. Now we're in business.
Are you okay?
Yeah, if I can get this thing working.
Higher, Rick, higher.
Okay, okay.
You're still firing too low, Rick.
Well, get a load of this one.
You all right, Rick?
Yeah. But you better not take a look at that landing field.
Why not?
What that explosion did to Doc Lorenz and those Japs isn't pretty. Hey. Hey, take a look upstairs.
What? Are those our patrol planes?
Yep. And right on schedule, too. And they'll still be on schedule, baby, when Japan's just a little island again. You and I are spending our honeymoon in Medicine Hat.
To our fine cast for their performances tonight with the Lady Esther Screen Guild players. Thank you again, Mary Esther, Humphrey Bogart, and Sidney Greenstreet. Please come back and do another play for us soon.
We'd like to, Mr. Bradley. You see, the Motion Picture Relief Fund, which receives the benefits from these series of programs, is something in which we're all very interested. Humphrey Bogart will be back in a minute or two to tell you about next week's program, which will be one of the outstanding radio events of the year.
Ladies and gentlemen, Humphrey Bogart.
Miss Ash has told you that next week's presentation of the Lady Esther Screen Guild Players will be one of the season's outstanding radio events. That is true. It'll be one of the really great American plays in a most successful motion picture, Dodsworth. Our stars will be Nan Sunderland, Walter Houston, and Betty Davis.
Next week, then, Lady Esther will present the Screen Guild Players in Dodsworth, starring Walter Houston, Betty Davis, and Nan Sunderland. Be sure to listen. Mary Esther can soon be seen in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production, Private Miss Jones. Humphrey Bogart and Sidney Greenstreet can soon be seen in the Warner Brothers picture, Casablanca. Across the Pacific, a Warner Brothers picture was adapted for radio by Bill Hampton, and the music was arranged and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The Screen Guild Players are presented every Monday night at this time by Lady Esther. This is Truman Bradley speaking for Lady Esther, saying thank you and good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.